Christmas is a time of great imagining. Young and old alike envision all kinds of possibilities. And in that way, Christmas provides an opening. It provides a fissure in the tissue that what was and what is to be might change. For those who've been around for a few years, Christmas provides an occasion when we purposefully or accidentally remember Christmases past. And for the young, it's a holiday when we can envision what may yet come, either under the Christmas tree or in God's wider world. For all of us, it's perhaps the only time of year when we're asked to really open our imaginations and transport ourselves across the millennia to a culture that is very, very alien to our own. Not just in a galaxy far, far away, but just as far as first century Galilee. So on this special night of vivid dreams, of deep imagining, of profound possibilities, imagine yourself. Imagine yourself in Bethlehem 2,000 years ago. It's a cold and cloudless and starry night. And there is the city where King David had been born 1,000 years before that. Imagine yourself in the story that you've heard unfold tonight. Now imagine yourself as an unmarried pregnant teenager. Now for some, it may be hard to imagine yourself as a woman. And for some, it may be hard to imagine yourself as young. You'd like to stay at home, but you've had to make that trek to Bethlehem because of a census the Romans are taking. And Quirinius is the governor of Syria. It's the plight of an occupied nation that the empire can do whatever it wishes. But here you are, tired, cold, walking into the town of your betrothed's ancestors. You're more than 8 months pregnant, and staying at home would have meant that at least you would have been in familiar surroundings. And as you walk into town, the light is fading after sunset, and then your water breaks. The child is going to come soon, but you have no place to stay. Joseph knocks on a door, and then a second door, and a third, and a fourth. No vacancy anywhere. With this census, the town is full. You know the line, no room at the inn. It's dark, and you are there homeless, pregnant, afraid, in pain. Dear God, what are you going to do? Now, imagine yourself as an innkeeper. You have a modest home with two rooms that you let out to travelers, but they've been rented out for days. The census has meant good business for you. And night has fallen, and there's yet another knock on the door. This is getting old fast. Too many people needing a place to stay. They're dusty, tired from travel. Some of them may be thieves, you don't know. As you open the door, you're met by a desperate-seeming man. And you recoil as he barks at you that they need a place to stay because his wife is going to deliver a baby. Thank God you have no room, because this would be a loud, messy process and you need to get some sleep. You've seen it all before, haven't you? But what is it that God calls you to do? You remember that story that your ancestors have told, that story about Abraham welcoming three strangers as they came to his tent. But none of those strangers was going to have a baby. But then your heart softens. And you think of what's possible. Okay, you think. Okay. Come this way, you say to the young man. The young man who has kind eyes, but those eyes that tonight are full of fear. And you lead him and his wife out to the cave around behind your house, where you keep your livestock, where your animals are sheltered. And as you bring them back, they see by the light of your lamp that there is fresh hay spread on the floor, and they thank you. It isn't much, you say, but at least you're out of the cold night air, and I'll have my wife bring out a bit of bread and some wine and some water and some old cloths. Here, I'll leave my lamp with you here in the stable. And the couple offer you thanks as the young woman lays down on the bed of hay. God help them, you think, as you head back to the house. God help them. Now imagine that you are a young father. A month or two passes after Mary has given birth to a son, and you have named him Jesus. But Herod is threatening to kill every male child in town. Just as if he's an avenging angel of the Lord at Passover, or maybe just a violent pawn of the Romans. You need to be on the move again, so you gather Mary and Jesus, and you put them on the donkey, and you head south across Judea, across and beyond the tribal lands and into Egypt. You're fleeing, not just for your life, but for the life of your young wife and your young son. Away from Herod, away from the Romans. Maybe it will be safer. But as you leave one kingdom, you must enter another. And you know that the government officials will be suspicious of you. You don't even know if they'll let you in past the border. You only know that you have to flee. And here you are, the wrong religion, the wrong ethnicity, poor, and with a young wife and a baby. What will you do if they don't let you enter because they're suspicious of your motives? But that was all 2,000 years ago, wasn't it? The baby doesn't stay in a manger. He grows up. He brings something new into the world, and not just for his own people. His message crosses borders and boundaries that governments and religious authorities set up. His message can't be kept out by a wall or by an army. We've done our best to domesticate him. Emperors and bishops and kings and presidential candidates and priests and pastors. But we can't. We can't because his message is beyond domestication. In a moment, I will read to you the story from John's gospel of Jesus coming into the world, not born of a virgin in a stable and laid in a manger, but as light coming into the cosmos. It's a beautiful and a profound spiritual image. But when the baby grew up, he proclaimed in the Sermon on the Mount, "You are the salt of the earth." But if the salt has lost its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It's no longer good for anything but is thrown out and trampled underfoot. And rather than referring to himself as being the light of the world, he said, you are the light of the world. A city built on a hill cannot be hid. Let your light shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. The possibilities of Christmas don't stay meek and mild. They cannot deal with governments that tolerate homelessness and reject refugees. The possibilities of Christmas depend on the grown-up Jesus. And they depend on you. They depend on you becoming the salt and the light. The possibilities of Christmas means that God's light comes into the world through you. That together we must welcome the stranger like Abraham did. That together we must become good innkeepers. That together we must be salt and light, enlivening and enlightening God's world. Is that any more unlikely than the story of a virgin conceiving and laying a babe in a manger in Bethlehem? So let us be salt and light. Amen. Tonight, as you come forward to share communion bread and wine, you'll also be offered a third element, a little taste of salt, to remind you that it's your job to be zesty in this world.